There are always circumstances, quiet, invisible forces, that shape the decisions that we make. Not all of us grow up with access to art shows or the money to go to art school, and that's okay. There's one thing we've learned throughout this podcast is that no two artists' journey are the same. Each one is full of detours, roadblocks, and moments of great success. Today's guest was raised pretty much in the middle of nowhere. No art programs, no galleries, just a drive to change his life, and a mindset that refused to settle for anything less than what he truly wanted to do. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson, and this is the Mired as Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, episode 60, Stefan, right after the break. If you enjoy the show, consider showing some support on MiredIsrael.com. You can collect limited edition art prints that not only support the show, but support our guests as well. You can also get more content on Patreon.com/MiredIsrael. Today's guest, not too long ago, actually released an art book titled Mirrored Dreams in collaboration with several other artists. So, if you're interested in art books and that sort of thing, I'll put the link in the description below for you to go check that out. Thank you so much for listening. Now back to the episode.
So my name is Stefan Großer-Halbur, also sometimes known as Plastic Pen, and I am an artist and illustrator from Münster in Germany, and I've been working as a freelance illustrator since, I always say around 10 years, but I'm saying that for a couple of years now, so maybe like 12 to 14 years now or so. Yeah, and I studied design, graphic design originally, and then shifted to illustration. And I am known for lots of purple art. So many know me from my use of purple or my love for purple, and lots of very, very detailed outline-based illustrations, lots of isometric illustrations as well. I think that that's kind of the cornerstones of my style, even though I'm not only using purple.
So is this the city that you grew up in, or did you move there from somewhere else?
No, I'm actually not from the city here, but not from too far away, actually. So I grew up in a small village. It's around an hour by car from Münster.
Oh, I love it when a guest says they're from a small town. It means we're probably going to relate right away. There's normally nothing really going on. You have to go out and find your own adventures and own fun. So what was Stefan up to?
In the town I grew up there is actually really not much happening. And as kids, we just used to play outside, like playing football or, as you guys call it, soccer, and going into the woods and doing stuff in the woods, you know, there's just being outside a lot.
Running around the woods, that's something I'm so grateful to have experienced growing up, being able to just run out there and do anything. There's a kind of freedom in that. And now I kind of wonder what kind of life my children will have not growing up in the countryside. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Growing up in a small town, I also meant something else. We didn't get the internet as fast as everyone else. The connection to the outside world, the bigger world, came much later. So for a while, we were just in our little town bubbles.
So I grew up with, or in a family that got an internet connection very late. And we only had like a very, very reduced TV programs. Like my parents were always like, no, we're not spending money on the private TV programs. We're just getting the governmental thing. I'm not sure, the public broadcasting or what is it called, something like that. But I was lucky that I had a couple of people in my family who kind of got me comic books, lots of Disney comics, lots of Franco-Belgian comics like Tintin or Asterix. That's pretty much the kind of artistic or creative influence I had as a kid, and that influenced me a lot back then.
You mentioned you had an interest in comic books growing up as well. Did that also lead to you beginning your drawing and being interested in drawing?
Yeah, I used to draw a lot. So it's often the question when you talk to people or when you're on a podcast, people often ask, when did you start making art? And I always say, from the point I was able to hold a pen, because all my childhood, I remember me drawing stuff. I started kind of just copying Disney comics, preferably Donald Duck and DuckTales and Scrooge. I just kind of redrew them and on any kind of paper I could find, with any kind of pen I could find. When I got older, I loved building models of, I don't know, you know, small kids, they like military stuff like tanks and planes and jeeps and any. And I had catalogs of the model companies. So there was one particular company that was, I guess, the market leader in model sets, model kits. And they had catalogs coming out a couple times a year. And whenever this catalog came out, I had to grab it. And I just took references from the pictures of the models. So there was kind of a Jeep, for example, or some people carrier vehicle. And I just took a pen and used these as a reference. And I think, or I'm pretty sure, this still shows in my art, because the love for details and the attention to little things, little connections happening in my illustrations originates to back then, I guess.
That love of comics sparked something early in Stefan, but it didn't stop there. You've also mentioned video games as a big influence. Was that another early doorway into creativity?
So we didn't have money for a gaming console. I really had to annoy my parents so much and ask them like 1,000 times until we finally got a computer and internet access. First, it wasn't available out there because I didn't only grow up in a small town, but also like on the outskirts areas of this small town. So there wasn't any opportunity to get a connection at all for a while. And then my parents didn't want to spend the money. And then the same thing goes for gaming consoles. One day, I think it was my birthday, but I'm not sure. Anyway, my mom came home from work, and it's crazy how vividly I remember this moment, because she brought home a Game Boy, the original brick Game Boy, the gray one, with Tetris and Darkwing Duck, those two games. And that was such a crazy moment for me, because it was like the family Game Boy. My mom played with it a lot as well. So that was the first console we got. And I had some friends who had NES or SNES. Mega Drive, I think, was the one before. And that kicked off my gaming or my gamer career. But it took quite a long time until I got my first non-handheld console, which was a N64. I had to really save so long to buy it, like lots of pocket money. And yeah, we never had many games, but maybe the appreciation for video games grew even bigger because I bought all the magazines and read about them and I watched whenever it was really rare, but whenever there was something on TV about video games back then, I wanted to watch it. And yeah, it's a big influence for me for sure in terms of storytelling, in terms of the lore and the pop cultural influence it has on our generation, I guess.
Video games, drawing, computers, anything creative, Stefan was into it. He didn't know exactly what he wanted to do with his life, but he knew one thing. It had to be something creative.
I pretty early had this image of myself that if I wouldn't be able to make money through a creative position or a creative job, I would be really fucked. So I'm not sure what I would have become in terms of profession, because I, at school, for example, I was always the creative guy, you know, the guy who you would come to if you wanted to have a picture drawn, the one who made the, so I was the one who made the design for our yearbook. Of course, I was pretty chaotic as well at the time. So, and I tried to inform about possible career options, but I was really not organized enough to actually set something up and get a straight image or a straight plan for what would be a nice way to go for me. And my parents couldn't help as well, because my dad is a carpenter. He is a creative on his own as well. He's retired now, but he still has a workshop, and every day he still performs his own creativity with working with wood. But he couldn't help me with my own plans there, because especially in the digital world.
Luckily in Germany, there's a bit of breathing room. The government requires everyone to do either a year of military service or a year of social service after high school. So Stefan had some thinking to do. He chose social service and spent a year working in an elderly care home.
And after that, I was pretty much lost, because I wasn't sure where to go next or what to do next. I tried to apply to art school, and that didn't work. I wasn't even able to create a portfolio thing, right?
Was that time of your life very stressful, not knowing what the next step was going to be?
Back then, I wasn't kind of the type or the kind of guy who would stress myself too much, which stressed my parents, on the other hand, because my parents were always really supportive. They were always like, you can do what you want, you love what you do. So they were really like perfect in that way. But they also were like, you have to do something, and you can't just like be a guy sitting there in his sweatpants playing games and holding a screwdriver at his computer all day. So they were pretty much concerned about me.
He Googled creative career paths and saw art school listed, but he had no real idea what that meant or what it would require. Art school felt like the mysterious elite thing, something other people did. During that time when you weren't sure what direction you were going, did you feel lost?
Felt pretty lost back then. Not hectic or not like overly concerned, but definitely not well or not good either, because it wasn't. I mean, when you're like 19 or 20 or so, and you don't really have a clear plan for your life, there's lots of people out there who are the same. Yeah, it's something you have to kind of work yourself out. I'm so happy how it all unfolded in the end, because I needed this structure of the job I then took, and I needed the time for finding my artistic voice. Others are perfectly fine in going to art school right after school, or right after they graduated high school or similar school forms, because they already have this artistic drive and they have a concept in their mind what they want to say and what they want to express. But I wasn't that.
You know, it's easy to think that everyone else has it figured out by the time they turn 18. But the truth is, some people just need more time. Some don't figure it out until they're 30, 40, hell, even 50. And that's okay. Not all of us are on the same track. Not all of us have the same path. And while someone else can have it all seemingly figured out by 18, that's also what you're seeing on the surface. You don't know what's going on in their mind. Stefan's path wasn't going to be drifting aimlessly for long. Eventually, he walked down to the employment office, hoping for guidance and maybe get some help finding a job that might actually fit his creative desires.
Funny thing is, just a little like side story, is that I went to the official office for unemployment in the area to say, hey, I finished my social service and I'm interested in a career in design and in art. What can I do and how can I find a job? And they were like, well, there's no such position here in this area, so can you please do something else with your life? And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. And I had been researching open positions in a very wide like radius from home, right? So a very large area. And that guy in the office was like, I'm looking here and I'm searching, and I'm saying to him, what's the search radius you're using is like 30 minutes drive from home. And I'm like, yeah, I found a position that's far away. It's like 60 to 70 minutes. And he's like, no, you can't take that because how would you go there? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I borrow a car or I take up a 3-hour commute every day or with buses and trains, or I move there. And he's like, with what money? And then I understood that I had had to deal with a very narrow-minded person. And I said to him, just let me handle it. I just apply to the job and see if they even want to see me for a job interview.
But the guy at the desk just wasn't getting it. Telling a creative person to just do something else? Come on, man. Be serious. Stefan wasn't about to let little things like a long commute stop him. I mean, he wasn't a dad with a mortgage and kids to take care of. He was young. He was searching. He was ready to take a chance on something. Anything that would feel like progress.
And if they want me to work there, I can figure something out. So what I did was I grabbed all my money I had, which was 900 euros back then, and bought a car. So after, of course, doing the job interview and they saying, hey, we'd like to have you for internship and maybe then for the position because we see something in you. And I bought a very old car with the 900 euros, which was it wasn't a lot of money back then. And it wasn't a lot of car I got. And then I asked in the company if there was any chance to live somewhere in the area, if they knew something. And one of their employees, and then later a colleague of mine, had free room in his house. And he was like, you can just move in there for a couple of weeks and see if you find something in the city. Just did that. And, you know, just being flexible and open. And then I found a very cheap room in a shared apartment in the city. And yeah, that was really exciting for me. And I learned that thinking in like we in a narrowly minded way doesn't get you anywhere.
Now that's what I like to hear. This car wasn't fancy. The living situation wasn't ideal, but he didn't let these details derail him. He took it one step at a time, each roadblock after another, and just kept going forward. Honestly, I think I need to take a page out of Stefan's playbook. How many times do you think I let little inconveniences throw off my whole day? It's all the freaking time. This dude bought a car and moved for a job he wasn't even sure about. I mean, that's guts. Were you excited, stressed? What was the feeling in the middle of all this?
Yeah, it was super, super exciting. And I was, it was sometimes weird. And I definitely was nervous about all that stuff. But thing is, I knew that I would never, ever find a position I liked in my hometown area anyway. So I would have had to move anyway. The jobs that were available there were all, there was all stuff I it was totally non-negotiable for me to apply for that stuff, right? So I knew I would have to move out at some point anyway. But yeah, of course, I mean, it was money was really tight, right? So because in the first year of my apprenticeship, the trainee position, I think I got like 520 euros or so a month. And a coworker pointed me towards some kind of program, some kind of a governmental program where you could get some extra. Or this was especially for trainees who had to move far from home. There was like a rule, you have to be this far from home and then you could apply to this. And that was the case. And that was some extra money I got. But it was definitely tough. But I kind of took it step by step, I guess. I'm not like a super brave or whatever kind of... I'm not an adventurous person per se. But it just happened step by step. Yeah, that was this way I could do it.
That's the thing. Stefan's not an adrenaline junkie or an adventure seeker. He's not out here chasing chaos, but one small, steady step at a time. And that's what moved his life forward. So what kind of work at this internship you got or this job, what kind of work were you doing?
That's kind of funny because the firm is a consultancy, so a business consultancy. Most of the workers there are consultants who go into manufacturing firms to optimize their processes and this kind of stuff. So not directly a media agency or something. And they have an in-house media department that works on supporting the workers there with presentation materials, with graphics, photography, and all that kind of stuff. And also creating marketing material for the company. So, for example, brochures, stuff for the website. They also host lots of events where they invite people from certain branches or industries. And these events need design and promo material as well. So that was kind of the field I was working in.
And at the same time, he was attending a sort of trade school thing a few weeks out of the year, learning new skills, trying to piece together his future plan.
And lots of the other students there were working in agencies. And at first I was a bit jealous because I was like, okay, they can do cool campaigns for cool clients and large brands or so. But most of these guys just had a pretty boring task to do, like pretty repetitive stuff. While I was joining my consultant colleagues on projects in other areas or cities as a designer or as a graphic guy, they could add to their team to support them whenever they need like an update on their presentations or stuff like that. And I saw and learned so much. And you remember I mentioned earlier that I was really chaotic, and they taught me to structure my work. And they taught me that they can wear better stuff for business meetings than a hoodie. And you know, it's I'm really thankful for these experiences, even if I, after a couple of years, I grew out of this position, because there was a certain limitation in terms of the design creativity in the work that it was needed there, which led me to finally study after all and go to uni.
The internship wasn't just a foot in the door. It was a crash course in how to work in the real world, how to show up, stay organized, and get things done.
But I'm really thankful for the experiences and the skills I learned there. I can say I'm a pretty organized guy now when it comes to work. Not in my personal life, but I think I have a switch in my brain. And when I start working on, I mentioned my book project earlier. I think before we recorded, I mentioned the book project I just released together with my friend a couple of weeks ago. And you can't run a book project, including 13 artists, without being organized and without giving structure to the whole project. And I think I still kind of benefit from my early apprentice years.
He stayed in that apprenticeship for 2.5 years. Then he worked at the same company for about a year after that. But there was something that had started to shift. There was this growing desire to go deeper into his work, to do something more personal or more expressive.
Then I, like I said before, I felt like I wanted to work on my conceptual and creative skills on a higher level. So I felt like I hit like a little bit of ceiling there in the company. I want to say I didn't have like space to experiment and be creative, because my bosses there definitely saw that they could get creative impulses from me, and they appreciated that a lot. So so I got this feedback a couple of times that they appreciate my new ideas I would bring in constantly, etc. But I felt like still there was like a ceiling I reached there. and that I wanted to grow out of this, the work I was doing back then.
So he did it. He applied to art school.
And then I applied to Münster School of Design, so the design school here in the city where I live, in 2010, I think. And my first application was actually rejected, and then the second one was accepted. And I moved here in 2011. Yeah, that was one of two cities I kind of had on my list in Germany, because in Hamburg and in Münster, there's departments for illustration. And even though I was more interested in graphic design, I always had an eye on illustration already. And I wanted to study at a university that had at least like a big focus on illustration, where I could take illustration classes, et cetera. Yeah.
Did you enjoy that time of your life being in art school?
So I think in retrospective, looking back at my years as a student, I think I went to uni with a little different of not enough balls, but different expectations to what it actually was in the end. So today I would say going to uni gives you space and time and the tools and the room to experiment and work on your creative expression and your personal, like what you want to stand for as a creative worker. And back then when I went there, I expected more like more direct transfer of knowledge into me. But it was more like, okay, there's this bubble you're entering. And within this bubble, you can pretty freely create your own path and go your own way. I saw lots of people who struggled with that because it was very easy to kind of weasel yourself through uni and get a graduation without actually really putting much work into it. And that was what confused me first. It's not that there was no challenge or so, but the opportunities and the many directions time there could go into was like overwhelming to me. So I felt overwhelmed by the opportunities, for example, the tools and the styles and the artistic disciplines I could move into. But in the end, I appreciated that after I understood what was asked there, I think I had a great time. After a while, you also learn which professors you have like a connection with and with who you do not really vibe, you know?
So when did you start using digital tools to make your art? What was that during the internship or was it even earlier or when was that?
I remember I installed Photoshop, some old Photoshop version on my computer because a friend got a cracked version on a CD and told me, hey, look, this is a nice graphic program. And during my school years, because that's what I worked with when I created the yearbook designs, for example. That was the correct version of Photoshop CS1 or so, maybe. Yeah. Well, and that were the first digital tools I used to work in a creative way. When you look at digital drawing, it wasn't until I think after that internship that was around 2007 maybe or so. I remember I bought a first Wacom Bamboo tablet for 70 euro, a very cheap thing, like a very small one. I think smaller than a postcard, the drawing area. And I did a couple of first experiments drawing in Photoshop. And then, like I said before, my boss told me that she would love to see me working more with drawing and with illustrative tools. And then they got me a larger Wacom Intuos. That was really cool because she told me, like, you can take it home if you want. Of course, profiting from me being totally passionate about learning more and becoming better. But no, they that was really nice because I could just take it with me. It was kind of my device I could use, and then I used to draw a lot, and At uni, I experimented a lot with watercolors, again, with fine liners and other traditional techniques. And then at some point, I think close to finishing my time at uni, I decided to go full digital again because I kind of felt more comfortable with the option to undo and erase things.
And nowadays, what do you use? What's your main setup look like?
I mainly use an iPad and Procreate now for my drawings. I also have a tablet on my PC, and I really like Clip Studio Paint, or Affinity is also really nice, a nice tool that's been catching up in terms of the drawing opportunities and the functions lately. But my main drawing machine is an iPad Pro. Yeah, a couple of years ago I tried Procreate, and it feels great. It's very direct, and I also love the Apple Pencil because it's somehow, I don't know, it has the perfect shape and weight for me. And I've always been looking for a similar pencil or drawing pen for my larger screen tablets, but I never found a pen that was as good or felt as good in my hand as the Apple Pencil. I would love to just dump all Apple products and go full Android and Windows, to be honest, because I'm had my Apple phase, but now I'm back to Windows PC because it's more flexible for me, and I can also use it for gaming. But I gotta say that for the pure drawing experience, the iPad is still really great.
So you've had a job, you got to university. What happened after graduation? Where did you end up working?
Since then, I've always been working as a freelancer. So the last employed situation or job I had was as an intern during my studies. So I think in fourth or fifth semester, I went to Berlin for 6 months to work in an agency. Back then, I felt like I understood what uni was about, and I started to see like a direction I wanted to go into. Back then, I still was very much interested in information design with illustrative influence, but still like also I was pretty much interested in the graphic design part of this information design discipline. And I took a couple of classes, and I felt like it was a good time to maybe take a step out of uni to learn some or to get some impressions in the agency world, because I didn't know anything about that back then because my former job was not in an agency. There was one agency in Berlin that was fully focused on information graphics, information design, and they had also a very illustrative approach to creating their graphics, etc. Yeah, and I just tried to get an internship position there. There was the only application I sent out because I was like, either I get this position or I just could continue with my studies, but I'm not really interested in working anywhere else because they released the magazine back then, and I read the magazine and it was really great stuff they were publishing there. And I was like, yeah, I have to get a foot in the door.
After that, Stefan was able to finally take the massive leap that so many of us desire to take, which is to start freelancing.
Yeah, that worked. And then I went to Berlin for that internship, which was a nice and good, very educational time as well for me. And after that, I never worked as an employee. It was always freelance, yeah. The good thing or what made this possible was that during being a student, I started taking freelance jobs here and there. Small stuff, of course, first. And that started to slowly work better and better. So I finished my bachelor and then had a half year before I started my master program as well here at Münster School of Design. And during that half year, I rented a studio space together with two fellow students of mine. during my master's studies, I was pretty much doing two jobs. I was a student and running that studio or being a freelancer. And there was this point where I kind of had to decide if I wanted to finish my master or just drop it and just work. But in the end, I finished uni and then, yeah. I think this kind of slow transition allowed me to not take any part-time or full-time position, you know?
In the beginning of your freelance journey, how did you land your first clients? Because I know that, like, just knowing where to begin is very hard for people.
I always say you got to start small, like in a small circle, and increase the size of the circle more and more in terms of asking or telling people that you're available for freelance. So you start with family and friends. I also had a couple of former colleagues who were then in new positions in different firms. There was one guy who founded a startup, for example. And so I kept the contact there or I called them and said, hey, I would be able to work for freelance as freelancer now. And if you want, you can hire me and spread the word, you know, get kind of word of mouth. I mean, that's still, even today, word of mouth is the best marketing you can get. And so that was kind of the smaller circle. And then after I got a couple of first smaller jobs here and there, I started to send around portfolios. Yeah, it's really small steps, but it's hard. It's definitely, it takes time. It takes lots of effort to put your work online and on different platforms.
So for many people, the dream isn't just to make art, it's to live off of it, to turn passion into a livelihood. How did it feel for you when that dream started to become a reality?
Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic. As a student, that was my big goal. I always had the big goal to be able to do just that, what you just described. And once I achieved that or reached that point, it was like, damn, it's you're there now. It's working. But at the same time, I got to say that you don't kind of reach the position and then it all just runs by itself. Right. So the thing is that it's really fantastic, but it still requires a constant effort to keep the stream and the flow of work coming your way.
Of course, no journey is without turbulence. Over the decade of you doing this job of freelancing and stuff, has there been a lot of ups and downs along the way? How have you dealt with that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, especially in the beginning, like in the first couple of years, I remember a couple of situations where I was like, okay, I have to, the telephone has to ring now, because if it doesn't, I don't know how to pay my rent for my studio, for example. Even though I think the good or one of the positive sides of being an illustrator as a freelancer is that you don't have like a crazy amount of running costs, but still, I mean, you need money to live from, of course. There have been a couple of situations where it was really tight, and where I, looking back now, I'm sometimes thinking like crazy how things just worked out in the end, because the telephone actually rang, or some friend reached out like, hey, I heard about a job that's on the horizon, and I thought about you. How's it going? Like, are you available? And I'm like, yeah, this is kind of perfect timing right now, because I really need a job. And I don't know, I try to not call it luck too much. There's always luck involved, like good old classic luck, but luck is something you got to push again and again. So that's kind of, this is not kind of some kind of mystical thing for me, or it's just really more like a work ethic, or yeah, something like that. I firmly believe that luck is just something you have to push again and again, and to increase the chances that it will turn to your favor.
I relate to that. You have to push luck. Sure, life is full of external variables, things completely out of our control, but we have to be ready. We have to prepare our minds, build our skills, and stay open to opportunity. Like that first internship, that place he crashed on while he looked for an apartment. Yeah, some of it was luck. But what made it possible was Stefan's drive, his willingness to find solutions to his problem. So about now, looking forward, got any big plans, any projects coming up? What are you focused on?
Yeah, that's really a funny or an interesting question. A couple of weeks back, I was discussing the same thing with my wife. Just kind of, I think we at dinner somewhere, we talked about that more or less randomly. But and I thing is, I don't have a really big goal right now. So the big goal was always to be able to live off my art and to be a full-time illustrator as a freelancer, and that works right now. That goal is achieved, and it's an ongoing goal, like I mentioned before. So it's something you still always have to work on. But I think I'm in a good situation right now. So there's not like something where that I'm working towards to where I think that's a huge goal. At the same time, I think it's really important. So my wife asked me, like, does it bother you? Is it like do you feel like it's a problem? I was like, I'm not seeing that as a problem right now. It's more like I think people expect that you need like a big goal in your life and you want to kind of live up to certain expectations, but that's of course kind of bullshit. And at the same time, I was thinking that it's really important to have goals. And whenever I have like live streams and people come on and ask me career questions and etc., one of my kind of main principles is always that you definitely need to have goals. But in my case, these are smaller goals. For example, it was always a dream of mine to create a fully illustrated poker deck and also a fully illustrated tarot deck. And I've been working on my poker card deck for almost a year now, for example. So I'm on that right now. And once that's done, I hope to maybe put it on Kickstarter later this year. And once that is out, that's one of the smaller goals I have achieved. And I'm pretty sure that with all this stuff, I mean, the list goes on, and with all that stuff, I'm pretty sure that it's not going to get boring for me. And that's fine, you know?
It doesn't matter how big or small the dream is. Stefan kept an open mind. He stayed focused. He figured out a path forward through every single roadblock, saying no at every dead end. He refused to let this world box him in. He knew he wanted to be a creative, and he believed there had to be a way to make it happen. Maybe your path is taking a detour. Maybe you're at a dead end right now. Try not to panic. Try to breathe. Take it easy. I know it's hard. Trust me. But stay focused on the dream. Move forward one step at a time. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. First, I want to apologize for the delay. I know there was an episode last month. I got super caught up with my dog's vet appointments and family stuff and trying to schedule guests and getting all that sorted out. But, you know, I guess I got enough interviews going on right now that we should be good to go for a while. So thank you so much for listening. If you keep in mind, I'm doing all this by myself. This My Art Israel is a solo endeavor. So if you enjoy what I'm doing, if you appreciate the work I'm putting in, if you see the vision, please help me out by going and buying a print off the website, myartisrael.com. If you buy a print there, not only do you get an awesome print, you support me, you support the artist, and then you can also head over to patreon.com/myartisrael and get bonus content as well. I'm working on some new projects for that, so stay tuned. Thank you so much, and I will see you in the next one.